Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I'm going to be reading the pantograph selections from Saturday, August 15th, Sunday, August 16th, and Monday, August 17th. We'll begin with an article on page 1 of the Saturday pantograph. Headline reads, Chalk to Talk, IWU Adapting Freshman Traditions to COVID-19 Era. Instead of chalking, first-year students at Illinois Wesleyan University were talking around Aspiration Fountain about their dreams for their college careers on Friday. It was one of many traditions facing modification in the midst of a pandemic to protect against the spread of COVID-19. We're still asking students to think about what are their goals and aspirations for the next 4 years, said Carla Carney Hall, Vice President of Student Affairs and Dean of Students. But instead of having the whole class writing their goals in chalk around the fountain, there was concern about shared objects like chalk. Small groups met at the fountain to discuss their goals. Olivia Schell, a freshman in nursing from Oak Lawn, said, "My aspiration and goal is to be able to finish nursing at the top of my class and making a difference in helping my community." The goal of Sebastian Chavrisi, a freshman in chemistry from Park Ridge, is to attend graduate school after graduating from IWU. Classes start on Monday, a week earlier than usual for IWU. That, plus eliminating fall break and having classes on Labor Day and some Saturdays, will result in the semester ending November 20th. The university is still trying to figure out what to do in lieu of the group picture of all freshmen in front of State Farm Hall, another tradition. Carney Hall said the group photo might take the form of individual photos edited together in a Zoom-like box. The online meeting platform, which many are becoming familiar in these pandemic days of virtual gathering. 50 years from now, when they come together, they'll have a very unique story to tell about their freshman year, said Carney Hall. Students are coming to campus with a mixture of excitement and apprehension, she said. I think that's true of all of us. There is a mix of wanting and craving a new normal, getting back into a routine, settling into a rhythm, but there's still a lot of uncertainty. Lily Muto, a freshman in psychology from Freeport, said, "I'm kind of nervous, I guess, but as each day passes, I get more comfortable." One practice is that greeting every student coming to campus, a practice one hopes need not become a tradition, is being tested for COVID-19. 4 students tested positive in the initial phase. "We felt that it was really important to establish a baseline for a healthy community through early identification and isolation of asymptomatic students," explained Carney Hall, who is IWU's COVID fall contingency planning chairperson. Dominic Bennett, a freshman in elementary education from Plainfield, said, "The first 2 days we were really cooped up as they waited for their test results to come back. They kept us really busy with Zoom meetings and other online activities." In addition to being tested on arrival, 5 to 10% of the student body will be tested every 2 weeks through the semester, she said. Student activities will mirror the academic plan, with a mix of in-person, hybrid, and online events. For example, one of the Turning Titan events during freshman orientation had 50 students attending in person and the rest participating online. There is an opportunity, not always fun, but an opportunity to think about how we deliver our core mission. Getting to know each other is more challenging for the new students. Social distancing is a little weird, and meeting people a little different when you're in a pandemic, said Chisari. Shell noted, "We can't interact real well because we can't see the faces." But, she said, "Wesleyan is doing a good job helping us have a good time, but keeping us safe, too." Carney Hall said she is very proud of the team, including student leaders, who have come together to find ways to provide a dynamic student experience. The university is providing clear messaging on what's expected, such as wearing face masks and maintaining social distancing, she said. Peer-to-peer pressure is important. Students who don't follow the rules will be held accountable, which could include being shifted to all online learning, she said. There's a lot of moving parts, said Carney Hall. It's all about making the best decisions within an environment that's constantly changing. Also, from page A1, the headline reads 14 counties at warning level. Increasing numbers may trigger return to social restrictions. Illinois reported its highest single-day number of new COVID-19 infections in more than 2 months Friday as the state continued to experience a resurgence of the novel coronavirus disease. The Illinois Department of Public Health on Friday reported 2,264 new confirmed infections over the previous 24 hours, the highest daily number since May 24th, when the state was coming down from its initial peak. That brings the total number of cases since the pandemic first hit Illinois to 202,691. IDPH also reported 25 additional virus-related deaths, bringing the death toll in Illinois to 7,721. Six of the deaths reported Friday were in Madison County in the Metro East, an area that has seen a particularly large spike in cases. There were 8 deaths in Cook County, 3 in Morgan County, 2 each in DuPage and Sangamon counties, and 1 each in Bureau, DeKalb, Iroquois, and Will counties. Laboratories reported processing 49,541 tests over the 24-hour period, the second highest daily test count so far during the pandemic. That made for a daily positivity rate of 4.6% and a 7-day rolling average positivity rate of 4.1%, an increase from 4.0% on Thursday. IDPH also reported Friday that there are now 14 counties listed at the warning level, which indicates an increase in 2 or more COVID-19 metrics. Those counties include Bureau, Cass, Clinton, Franklin, Greene, Grundy, Hancock, Jefferson, Kane, LaSalle, Moultrie, Perry, Union, and Will. As of Tuesday, August 11th, according to IDPH, the rolling positivity rate in the Metro East area was 8.2%, surpassing a benchmark that can trigger new social and economic restrictions. It was also the 6th consecutive day of a rising positivity rate in that region. As of Thursday night, 1,612 people in Illinois were reported hospitalized with COVID-19. Of those, 345 patients were in intensive care units, and 126 of those patients were on ventilators. Each of those statistics is slightly lower than Thursday's numbers. The rolling positivity rate in the region of central Illinois that includes Bloomington and Peoria increased 0.1% to 5.6%. That region has had 7 consecutive days of rising positivity rates. The positivity rate in southern Illinois held steady at 7.5%. The rates in other regions ranged from 2.5% in eastern Illinois to 6.6% in Kankakee and Will counties. To help prevent the spread of the disease, IDPH continues to advise all people in Illinois to wear face coverings and to maintain at least a 6-foot distance from others when they are out in public. From page A3 of Saturday's paper, headline reads Boys Girls Club to offer full day care. Boys and Girls Club of Bloomington Normal is expanding to a full day program following announcements by Bloomington District 87 and McLean County Unit 5 that they are shifting to remote learning for the start of the fall semester. The club announced that, beginning August 24th, it will be open 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at 4 locations for at least the first 9 weeks of the school year. Both school districts said last week that because of the rise in COVID-19 cases locally, the districts would begin the semester with online learning, but would reevaluate in October whether to return students to in-person instruction. We are going to provide an environment for the kids to be supervised and supported by tutors throughout the day. Boys and Girls Club CEO Tony Morstatter told the Pantograph on Friday. The four locations will be the clubhouse, 1615 West Illinois Street in Bloomington, two locations at First Christian Church, 401 West Jefferson Street in Bloomington, and Second Presbyterian Church, 404 North Prairie Street in Bloomington, Morstatter said. One location will be for Unit 5 elementary school students, one for District 87 elementary school students, one for Unit 5 junior high and high school students, and one for District 87 junior high and high school students, he said. Right now, the maximum capacity is a little over 200 youth, Morstatter said. There are no income stipulations for families that apply. As some of our parents struggle with childcare due to our strict moving to a remote learning environment, I am thankful for organizations like the Boys and Girls Club that can provide support for parents and children in a safe environment, said District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley. Bloomington Normal, YMCA, Scribble Center for Learning, and Four Seasons Health Club are among other locations offering help for parents and students this fall. In addition to supporting students' remote learning, Boys and Girls Club will offer its core programs, education and STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics, arts and culture, good character, leadership, and service learning, healthy habits, including sports and recreation, teen services, and career development. Boys and Girls Club is hiring about 25 staff people. The cost of the expanded program will be about $175 per student per week, Morstatter said. The club is asking families to pay $25 per week. That leaves $150 per member, or $30,000 to $40,000 that the club must raise through grants, donations, and partnerships, he said. Anyone who wishes to apply for the full-day program or wants to make a donation to support the families may go to www.bgcbn.org or call 309-829-3034. That's 309-829-3034. Also on page 3, Bloomington lends fire truck to Decatur. The Bloomington Fire Department has lent Decatur a ladder truck after a traffic crash on Sunday. Decatur Fire Department's Tower 1 ladder truck was taken out of commission after being hit by a motorist who ran a red light, officials said. The driver was booked on a preliminary charge of drunk driving. Battalion Chief Jim Ohl had estimated damage to the vehicle was in the thousands of dollars. A new replacement truck would cost about $1 million. The fire department on Friday thanked Bloomington on Facebook for the help. Don't be alarmed when you see the Bloomington ladder truck responding to calls in Decatur the next couple of months, the Post said. And a Crime Stoppers alert, suspect sought for a sex assault charge. Crime Stoppers in McLean County is asking for the public's help in finding a person who is wanted on felony charges. Randall Lee Patrick, 50, is 6 feet, 1 inches tall, and weighs 180 pounds. He has brown hair and hazel eyes. His last known address is in Colfax. Patrick is wanted on a charge of predatory criminal sexual assault. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of up to $1,000 for information leading to the arrest and indictment of people who commit felony crimes in McLean County. Call 309 2811111. From Sunday, page A3, the headline reads, New Fitness Center Set for Former Site of Hobby Lobby. Crunch Fitness plans to open in late December in the former Hobby Lobby in the Shops at College Hills. The gym, known for its judgment-free zone tagline, intends to invest $7 million in redevelopment. The 90,000-square-foot building, said Heba Abduljawad, spelled A-B-D-J-U-J-L-A-W-A-D, Crunch Fitness Marketing Director. You'll find everything you'll need at Crunch, he said, in an email to the Pantograph. That includes treadmill, stairmasters, ellipticals, and other cardio equipment, a well-stocked dumbbell rack up to 120 pounds, and free weights to go along with power racks, multi-Olympic platforms, and plate-loaded equipment, she said. The fitness center will also offer more than 50 classes a week, including programs such as belly, butt, and thighs boot camp, bar boot camp, yoga body sculpt, and Zumba. Crunch Fitness intends to occupy around 45,000 square feet on the west side of the building while converting the remaining 35,000 square feet to a multi-tenant space. The company is currently under negotiations with several national tenants to lease the remaining space. Though the fitness center plans to open in late December, the manager said the gym would operate a temporary workout facility in the Gold's Gym Express, 1108 Trinity Lane in Bloomington. People who are interested in memberships and who are former Gold's members can call 309-807-3388 for more information. The Normal Town Council is set to approve a final development plan for the location on Monday during its meeting. Enterprise Rent-A-Car would remain in its current location on the south side of the building. Hobby Lobby vacated the building at 301 South Veteran Parkway in favor of moving into the former Gordman space at 306 South Tawanda Avenue in the same shopping center. A 45-year-old male motorcyclist was pronounced dead early Saturday in Bloomington after officials say his motorcycle struck a fixed object. McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder said the incident took place on southbound Center Street near its intersection with Armory Drive. The victim was identified as Austin D. Roof. The coroner's office was notified of a death at that location at 12:04 a.m., Yoder said. The man, described by Yoder as the presumed operator of the motorcycle, was pronounced dead at 12:11 a.m. A passenger was taken to an area hospital. Roof died of multiple blunt injuries, Yoder said. A toxicology test is pending. The incident remains under investigation by the McLean County Coroner's Office and Bloomington Police Department. And from Sunday's paper, page A1, the headline reads, Lasting Memories. 75 years later, Central Illinoisans reflect on World War II's end. A U.S. Army infantryman watching dancing in the streets of London, a girl whose father was in the Navy taking in her mother's excitement, that girl's future husband praying and celebrating on Bloomington's west side, a U.S. fighter pilot outside Japan having a drink and experience relief but apprehension about the future, a Japanese teenager opening a window and feeling freedom. The end of World War II meant a variety of experiences on August 15, 1945, now known as VJ Day, short for Victory Over Japan. The Japanese surrender, effectively bringing an end to World War II, set off several days of celebration throughout the United States and the world. 75 years later, seven Central Illinoisans recall those experiences and reflect on their meanings today. They were dancing in the streets. Ralph Rossman was on the drive to St. Lo as part of the Battle of the Hedgerows when he was hit by shrapnel. "I got clobbered," Rossman, 99, quietly recalled. "Fragments of artillery shells went into the right side of his neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down," he said. "I was in and out of it." That was July 9, 1944, in northern France, far from the farm between Minonk and El Paso, where Rossman grew up. Rossman attended a one-room county school, then hitchhiked each day to and from Minonk High School. After he graduated in 1939, he worked on the family farm until he was drafted in November 1942, 11 months after the United States had entered the war. He joined the Army C Company, 120th Infantry, 30th Division, and was later shipped overseas. Before D-Day, June 6, 1944, he lived in a civilian home along the English Channel because there weren't enough barracks for all the American troops. 8 days after D-Day, he and his company landed at Omaha Beach. 25 days later, he was wounded during the Battle of St. Lo, a city that Americans had targeted because it served as a strategic crossroads. Rossman was taken to an aid station, then flown to a hospital in England. "They put me in traction," he recalled. "I was flat on my back. They put a harness around my head and attached weights to the harness. It eventually stretched the spine enough so the nerve got healed up in some way. The paralysis wore off, and here I am 99 years later." Rossman was in the hospital until December, and then he was shipped back to France. "I went right back to C Company and into the Battle of the Bulge," he said. That battle, from December 1944 to January 1945, was the last major German offensive on the Western Front during World War II. "They wanted everybody who could walk," Rossman said. But the company commander soon decided that given the injury that Rossman had survived, he didn't belong at a battle taking place in 2 feet of snow. He was reclassified and worked in a base post office near Paris from January until November 1945. Rossman doesn't remember VE, Victory in Europe Day, May 8, 1945, when the Allies accepted the unconditional surrender of Nazi Germany. But he does remember VJ Day, August 15, 1945, when Imperial Japan surrendered to the Allies, ending the war. "I was in London on furlough from France," he recalled. "I got in London on VJ Day night, and they were dancing in the streets. We realized the war was over." Rossman returned to the United States in November 1945. "As soon as I went by the Statue of Liberty, I said, 'Thank God I made it home.'" He was discharged on December 15, 1945, and returned to Minonk. He began a long career with the U.S. Post Office, working in the Minonk Post Office, then on city and rural routes around Minonk, then on a rural normal route, before retiring in 1979. He then worked at Minonk State Bank before retiring for good in 1945. He and his wife, Bernie, moved to Normal in 2000, then to Westminster Village in Bloomington 2 years ago. Private First Class Rossman received the Purple Heart for his injury, the Bronze Star for being in combat, and the French Legion of Honor for fighting on French soil. What does VJ Day mean to Rossman? "It means we saved a lot of lives," he said. "Of course, we dropped the atomic bomb and a lot of lives were lost. But if we invaded Japan, we would have lost a lot of Americans. Many of them were my friends." On the morning of December 7, 1941, Barb and Alice Sebiano left 7 a.m. Mass. They were planning to go to a friend's house for breakfast when Alice said, "No, We're going home, Barb recalled. To this day, she doesn't know why Alice, her older sister, decided they should go home instead. I guess God didn't want us yet, Barb continued. Seb Yobiano, then Barb Thompson, lived in Honolulu near Pearl Harbor with Alice, their mother Flo. Her father, Harry Thompson, then a chief petty officer, was stationed at Pearl Harbor and was the officer in charge that day of the submarine USS Narwhal. After the girls got home, they heard loud rumbling, went outside and realized that the planes were Japanese aircraft. The larger bombers headed to Pearl Harbor, but the smaller fighters came over the Thompsons' neighborhood and opened gunfire. Gunfire landed just a few feet in front of the girls, and they and their mother ran inside and turned on the radio, then heard that Pearl Harbor was under attack by the Japanese. They nailed blankets to the windows and huddled with another family in the middle of the house as the bombing went on for nearly 2 hours. They cried and they prayed. When they went out the next morning, they thought they would see Japanese soldiers, but instead saw tents for civilians whose homes had been bombed. Among those killed were the two friends who she said she and Alice were going to join for breakfast. The girls were devastated and worried about their father. 3 weeks later, she and Alice returned to school, and nearly half of Barb's classmates were gone. I found out that those friends were Japanese who were put in camps and stayed there until the war was over, Barb recalled. There was a lot of crying in those days. In late December, they found out their father was alive, and he spent an afternoon with them. He told them that on December 7th, while his crew fired back at the planes, the submarines didn't get bombed. So after the bombing stopped, the crew dove into the water to rescue as many men as they could. On February 8, 1942, Barb, her sister, and mother were among civilians evacuated to San Francisco. After 3 years, they moved to Bloomington to be near her father's parents in case he didn't make it home. Now, Barb, 86, doesn't remember much about VJ Day, just that my mother, was extremely excited. But her husband, Paul Segobiano, has memories. At the time, he was living in the same Westside Bloomington neighborhood where he and Barb live today. Paul Segobiano, 87, recalls praying in school and a celebration in the neighborhood that night. There certainly was a celebration in the streets. He said, after the war, Barb, her sister, and her mother and Harry Thompson completed his naval service. They returned to the Bloomington Normal area in 1948. Barb became a nurse, she married Paul, and they had 5 children, 11 grandchildren, and 10 great-grandchildren. They've been living in the same West Side home for 60 years. Paul, a Korean War veteran, worked at Illinois State University for years, founded with Barb the Bloomington Knockers Youth Football Program, served on the McLean County Board for 45 years, and is Director of Development for the Great Plains Life Foundation, which works to keep kids in school. What does VJ mean to Barb today? It means we're a strong nation. I know I was happy that the Japanese were conquered, but many of them were my friends. That there was a lot of devastation. Paul said, I served in the military to protect that flag. In the service, you learn discipline and respect. We are one nation. War brings death and destruction. So much can be avoided if we meet at the table. This has been Rita Schulte reading you excerpts from the Pantograph from Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, August 15th, 16th, and 17th. Please stay tuned for part 2.